Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Science Studio program. And this is Keith's panel. We have an entrepreneur. It's an entrepreneur that started life as a scientist and got into the pharmaceutical business and now is doing very well with a company in Taiwan. And the name of our guest is Dr. Keelong Hong. And Keelong, welcome very much to Science Studio.
I'm glad to be here.
We're glad that you're here. We've got a special relationship with you that we'll come to later. But before we get into that, there was a time when Keelong was just a six-year-old or a 10-year-old. Did you have any inkling at that young age that science and scientific activity was going to be a career?
No. When I was a kid in Taiwan, in the countryside, I watched my brother work so hard. We had a little land in the field, and we were poor. That was after World War II. And I wish I would get out of this poor environment.
Right.
So the only chance I figured out as a kid, say that study, go to school, is going to be my way out, this farm working.
So, I mean, did you have a large family? I mean, say one brother or many?
My parents had 10 kids. I'm the number nine.
So you saw 8 children younger than you working very hard in fields and decided...
Older than I am working in the field.
Right.
Yeah.
So you went to a special school in Taiwan or just regular schools?
No, it's public school. Public school. And quickly, teacher found out I'm good in school, even though my father only told me that go to school is for me to be able to read, to write, not like a blind cannot read anything. That's all I remember. Education to my father is that.
Right.
Just to be able to read.
And then the reading, the writing, and were you good at arithmetic? Were you good at mathematics too?
Then I don't get help from my older sister or older brother. Because they are not well educated, the most they get is junior high, but somehow I was able to go to good school, public school, and go to high school. Eventually, got to university, and in my village, I was the first one got to the university.
Oh my goodness! So you're well known there. Is there a plaque somewhere in the village saying Keelong lived here? Or?
No,
not yet.
The only thing I remember when I was in the university.
Where did you go? Which university in Taiwan?
In the southern Taiwan called Cheng Kung University, and that's the university famous for engineering. But I didn't get to Taiwan University. That's the most famous one.
Right.
Established by Japanese, because before World War II, Taiwan is part of Japan. So, but that's the most famous one. But I didn't get to that, the best one, but I went to the one in the southern Taiwan. But I came home in the countryside. Some kids passed by, told me something I didn't know. When I was the sixth grade to prepare go to the junior high, we had to pass the exam to get a junior high. And the kid passed by and said, look it, this is somebody's uncle with test 100 points continuously in the math. And all those, my tests all collect by school continue exhibiting in there. They saw that. I even didn't know my test paper was collected by school. So I realized, yes, I was...
Pretty good.
Pretty good. They even collect my tests.
What did you study in the university?
Chemistry.
Oh, well, you're a very sensible gentleman. And then I know, we'll cut straight, because I know the reason that I know you is because after your first degree from Taiwan, you came to the University of Texas at El Paso for graduate studies with one of my compatriots, Michael Davis. And what made that decision for you?
1968. Before I come to the United States, I worked 2 years as a full-time teaching assistant in Taiwan. In Taiwan, there's no graduate school, so the teaching assistant had to be a full-time job. Right. I was only making 1,000 NT dollars, only equivalent to $25 a month. So that's situation. So I need scholarship to come to the United States. So I applied summer universities. I couldn't get the full scholarship. I only get tuition waiver. So I couldn't come to the United States. Dr. Whalen found a graduate program here.
Right.
Wrote a letter.
This is Dr. Bill Whalen.
Yeah, Dr. Whalen, yeah. Wrote a letter to Taiwan, and a student of mine gave me the letter. So I sent my transcript, and Dr. Whalen even didn't ask the reference or recommendation letter, so gave me the I-20 form. That's the document that I can leave my country, come to the United States. So I show up at UTEP.
It turns out, Keelong, that we have a lot more in common, because in 1969-70, yeah, I also got a letter from Professor Whalen when I was on the faculty in England, telling me to apply for a position here. I sent back my vita, no letters of reference, nothing, and within a month I got the offer of being a faculty member here. So, Bill Whalen, we both owe a great deal to this gentleman, right? Very funny. So, after your master's program here, you did physical chemistry, and you went to Berkeley to study what?
I was here, learn more physical chemistry, even though I took some physical chemistry when I was in Taiwan. But I did a lot of organic chemistry in Taiwan. I already decided I'm not going to get into working organic synthesis.
Ah.
Even though I was very good in organic chemistry, but I decided I got to do something else because I don't want to put myself in the lab all every day.
Okay? Right.
So, and then went to Berkeley. I just tried to appreciate the reason I was able to go to Berkeley because UTEP training. Obviously, when Berkeley accept me, give me full scholarship, even try to pay my foreign student tuition, because extra money, right? And they say that we like to have your master degree transcript, that if you send a transcript, they willing to pay moving expenses.
Wow.
I was so shocked. Who pay graduate student moving expenses to go to school?
Well, they didn't pay my moving expenses as a faculty member from England.
So I went to the registrar's office and said, please, I'm going back to Taiwan. I'm not here to wait for that transcript ready to send to Berkeley, but I really need that moving expenses. The registrar office told me, don't worry. As far as I know, you are the first student going to Berkeley. I'm sure. I'll make sure that I send your transcript back there.
That's lovely.
Yeah, very interesting.
So, in Berkeley, you did some organic chemistry then?
No.
No.
I went to Berkeley. First thing I said, well, they had big faculties, more than 60s, right? I had a chance to select a field. I will not lose interest all my life. So I got to look for it. And Berkeley Chemistry Department has two professors, one in organic chemistry, one in physical chemistry, try to help graduate students to go the field that they don't regret it, all right? But most students come to Berkeley, they know exactly what they want. They are so smart. They say, I want to be some kind of scientist.
It's either smart or blinkered. They can be blinkered. They just don't have a big enough vision. Yeah.
So I went to the professor. I was so honored to say that this is the stage I want to be careful to select a professor, a field. And then he said, don't worry. You are much earlier than most students. Some students get PhD, still don't know what they are going to do in their career. So you are much earlier. So don't worry. I'll help you out. I'll give you credit, look for research field. Extra 2 credits.
Wow.
Because he said that this is education. You have to talk. We are going to arrange so you can talk to different lab. But you don't decide it. You have to come back, talk to me. We'll help you to decide. I appreciate this professor. Really understand what I want. So
who was it? What name him?
Bartlett. He's the one that synthesized an inert gas compound from Canada.
I know.
I was faculty in
Neil Bartlett. I know, well, he's done a science studio program here 35 years ago, and he graduated from same university I did in England, University of Durham.
Wow, right. The world is so small. Anyway, I saw, and then he said, he said, but don't rule me out. I feel I'm really, you know, I feel good about it.
Okay.
So I arranged it, and finally, I select a young assistant professor just appointed from Stanford. He said to me, he asked me, that whether I know lipid or not. I said, no, lipid could be a fat. She said, oh, yeah, lipid. How about phospholipid? I said, no, I don't. Then he started writing the phospholipid structure. And then he said, you know, I'm used to working at ESR. I'm working on biomembrane.
ESR, for the listener, is electron spin resonance.
Yeah.
It's a technology for looking at electrons that go around singly by themselves.
Yeah, right. And then he said, do you know how we had a vision? I said, well, there's a lens that I know. He said, no. How about the image on the retina? And that signal transmit to nerve. That caught my attention. Finally, he said, I want to work on this to interpret, using physical chemistry to interpret how the signal transmit from image, like a camera, to the nerve. A nerve signal is different from the image. That's really attractive, right?
Right.
So, gee.
It's a fundamental question.
Yeah.
I mean, really fundamental.
Right. So I thought, finally, I realized that physical chemistry can explain life phenomena. So I was so excited. But even though I don't know anything about phospholipid, then he said that even though he just started, he cannot support me as research assistantship, but the first year I was supported by the department. I was the teaching assistant, so I can finish my first year.
Yeah, so when you finished your PhD, all right, you now understood a lot more about signaling and nerves and all the rest of it, signals to the brain, etc. Yeah. Then what did you do? Because that's the key step, it seems, in many careers, that you've got a PhD, and now there's this big wild world out there that you've got to simply find your own pathway, your own passion. How did that develop for you?
Well, I remember that when I went to Berkeley, the first professor I talked to was in microwave spectroscopy. And the first question he asked me was, do you think you want to get Nobel Prize? That was shocking. Wow. I said, well, I sort of hesitate. He said, yeah, I asked this kind of question because I expect Berkeley students should have this kind of thinking coming here.
Right.
I know I will not stay in that lab because that pressure is too high. That professor is expecting you to work on something, you know.
All right.
But actually, I just want to... I stay in that field in biomembrane because that's exciting because, you know, everything is black box.
We have to leave this conversation for a moment. We're going to take a short break. My name is Keith Pannell. I'm here with Keelong Hong from a private company in Taiwan, which is now called Taiwan Liposone Company. And we'll be back in one moment. Welcome back to Science Studio. Keith Pannell, Keelong Hong from Keelong Hong from the Taiwan Liposone Company Limited in Taiwan. So that's a beginning of being thrown in the deep end of an academic career, doing so well that your advisor tells you to go and do something different. So what did you do?
I went to Stanford because his close friend, Stanford, in the Department of Anesthesia, doing research there. And that's a field that somebody totally from membrane.
Right.
And in that research lab, they have a lot of funding try to find out the occupation, the anesthesiology that's exposed to anesthetic. They had professional disease. So the NIH has grant to find out why.
Right.
And so they want to do research. They hire me not to do something very interesting to me, also my background. They had a project in that lab, pressure reversal analgesia means that if tadpole in the water with ether, they'll go to sleep. But you put pressure, they'll wake up. So they're always amazed, you know, this kind of thing. And there's one post that we're working on that, using EPR to measure membrane fluidity. Well, and I say they loosen up or you put pressure, membrane region, rigid, more rigid, then the molecule came out of membrane and then they wake up.
Wow.
I'm perfect to do those work, right? Because
yeah,
I know
right.
ESR, I right. also know membrane, right? No, I had to do the metabolism anesthetics. I didn't have any training in this.
Science is often too complicated, right?
Right.
So, but anyway, so you spent how many years there at Stanford?
2 years.
2 years?
Working on the metabolism of the top one.
Okay.
Nitrous oxide.
So what? Oh, N2O.
Yeah.
Laughing gas.
Right. And if you know, that's no good label to follow, right? C14, you can do cytochrome drug, the halothane. You can do
laughing
that.
Gas for those out there is an anesthetic. Then what happened? I mean, 2 years at Stanford, and let's go quickly to now the entrepreneur.
Okay.
But I want to know this 18 years in between.
Okay. Right. So there, right, I learned all the anesthetics and that. And then I came to UCSF as a scientist, research scientist, to working on the, back to the field I was interested in, at Berkeley, protein-lipid interaction.
Okay.
Most related
this
to
is
membrane.
The University of San Francisco.
Yeah, University right. of California.
California, San Francisco. It's a great school for biomedicine.
Yeah, right.
So you spent how many years there?
20 years.
20 years. And then you were looking at this lipid-protein interactions.
Yeah, right.
And that spawned an idea in your head for a private company, for an independent activity.
So
what was the idea that you had?
The idea was protein-lipid interaction got a stage that published some membrane fusion-related protein, but I didn't know how to clone the proteins, and I was not willing to learn that to solve the problem related. So I decided to switch myself into the field in my lab, drug delivery, because they use liposome, a nanoparticle, a lipid, and then they deliver drug to certain tissue. So I switched into related drug delivery. And ends up that I open up the field a lot. I contribute that many questions that people in that field they couldn't answer.
Okay.
I answered. So I found out I was good in that. And by the way, going to industry because of the environment, you know, the Genentech founded by faculty from UCSF.
Right. Okay.
And that continued as a more another one from. Another company in Berkeley.
Tell us, though, what is a liposome so that we're all understanding where you're going to go with this?
Liposome is, we know the biomembrane has a lipid and protein. And lipid, that's the natural lipid you can isolate from soybeans, you can isolate from egg yolk. The first phospholipid I isolate is from egg yolk. So it's a nature things. And then they can form bilayer like a membrane, but without protein. And just this lipid, like you can make it large or small, and then you can put a drug inside this 100 nanometers small particle, but you can put a drug inside.
Okay.
And then when this carry the drug in the blood circulation, they don't release right away until reach, for instance, tumor. They release more in the tumor area. So that's...
So it's in a sense, it's a vesicle?
Yeah,
it's a
vesicle.
It has a cargo. The
right.
cargo is usually some
right.
medication
right.
for a particular target.
Yeah, and the component is biodegradable, so don't
all
give
right.
you toxicity.
So the trick here, though, is to make the carrier recognize its target.
Yeah.
Right? That's, I presume, the difficult part.
Yeah. That's why in 1980s, there are three liposome companies form in United States,
right.
one in Canada, that's the fourth one. And my boss is one of them.
Okay. And you started your company back in Taiwan, or did you start it
No,
here?
I my boss formed a company. I wasn't involved with that company
okay.
in the beginning because my boss hired me to take care of research in university, and he spent more time with company.
Okay.
So that's why I was a pure scientist there, take care of his lab. But when those companies been bought, liposome in the pharmaceutical industry sort of stopped. But I saw there's still potential. I feel that I should, by myself, continue form liposome company to do something that I think there's a possibility I can do it better.
So if I can then surmise here that you've got this tremendous background, mm-hmm. you're in an area which is just beginning to open up and flourish,
mm-hmm.
but as you've stated it, and as I understand it, drug delivery is the key feature.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So then how do you go about using your expertise to determine, well, there's all sorts of drugs, there's all sorts of problems and diseases. How do you focus? What did you decide was a key area to focus your company activity in?
At the beginning, we thought cancer is the one we can help because cancer drug is so toxic, right?
Yes.
And give you a lot of side effect. So if we can concentrate more drug on the tumor, then the patient will be better. But yes, we started there, right? So I repeated the first approved in the United States liposome drug to treat Kaposi's sarcoma. That's age-related tumor.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That was at a good time.
Yeah, good time.
I shouldn't say good time, but it was an appropriate time.
Right. So that one approved. And then people excited say, okay, liposome being approved for certain disease, even though not widely used, but really help the Kaposi's sarcoma patients. And then we aim at cancer. Later on, the same liposome was treated ovarian cancer. That's much more exciting. It's better than the standard treatment at that time for ovarian cancer. Then later on, moved to breast cancer. So the same old drug, doxorubicin, in the liposome, turn into new use.
So, I mean, just to give the audience and myself, because I hear a lot about the so-called valley of death for entrepreneurs that have a clever idea and then they get patents and then they've got to go through a phenomenal regulatory time period where you may or may not get approval. How long did it take once you've done your initial tests to get approval of your approach for FDA and whatever other authorities there are in other parts of the world?
5 to 10 years.
5 to 10. All right. So that's a long period of time.
And
in the interim, you're supported by people who are donating money, the so-called angels who are hoping that you turn up trumps.
They don't donate. They hope that you succeed and they can make a lot of profit. but I started not from a big angel. I started a company with $1 million. So that just tried to prove the concept that I can make it in Taiwan. So 1997, liposome company was formed there. I just want to make one, reproduce the U.S. product with my idea input for the ovarian cancer, breast cancer, Kaposi's sarcoma.
Right.
So spend that $1 million in Taiwan. In 5 years, I didn't have a lab. I used university incubator and succeeded. So market in 2002 in Taiwan. So that drug still in Taiwan, the income is about $1 million a year.
That's enough.
Maybe
it's not. It depends how ambitious you are.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit. You were a young boy. You saw your brothers, sisters, presumably also working in the fields. And you said, no. I think something different. You went to school. You discovered that you were quite good at doing academic subjects.
Right.
You came to North America. You studied in El Paso. You went to Berkeley. You went to Stanford. You went to San Francisco. This is all showing an incredible ambition, if I may say so. So today, where are you? What's your ambition today?
Yeah, if you look at me, people say that I have some ambition, but my idea was I just want to pursue something interesting. My ambition now, I want to have a, you know, I'm from Taiwan, and that I always feel that I want to do something that society that I have today, I grew up there, so I feel that that's an emotional attachment there. So I want to have a company started from Taiwan, turn into the global pharmaceutical company, because I look at Switzerland is a small country, but has two big pharma in the world, and they are not based in Switzerland, but they are a global company.
Right.
I want Taiwan, a small country, want to be high biotech, had this kind of company. In fact, I was able to bring Taiwan Liposome Company to NASDAQ last year. We listed in NASDAQ November last year. So we are not just Taiwanese company.
We went public, an international company.
Yeah, we went public 2012 in Taipei. Now, 2018, we listed in NASDAQ. So I hope that soon I want my company to be a global company.
That's pretty good. We could go on and on and on talking, Keelong, because, you know, you've got such a fascinating story. And I summarized some of it before. And here you are at the end of a career. No, you're not at the end, but you're well into the beginning of the end anyway. Let me put it that way. And you've still got this idea, this tradition, this ambition, shall I say. It's been a great pleasure having you here on Science Studio. I'd like to thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you.
And what else can I say? It's just the fact that this gentleman that I'm talking to was mentored by two of my very best friends, both have passed on, Bill Whalen, who was the chair of chemistry, Michael Davis, who was a professor, and they mentored this fellow, and he's back, and he's made a very nice contribution to the University of Texas at El Paso. And it's just been a great pleasure. Thank you so much again.
Well, thank you.
Again, Keelong Hong from the Taiwan Liposome Company Limited. It's been a great pleasure having you back here in El Paso, and it's been a wonderful program. Sam Cassiano, thank you for putting it together. And we will be back next week with another program. Adios.